Welcome to Two Teas in a Pod. I'm Kate Diaz, a Manchester math teacher and elected president of CEA, the Connecticut Education Association. We are Connecticut's largest teachers union, representing tens of thousands of professional educators across the state.
And I'm Jocelyn Delancey, a fifth grade teacher in Darien, elected vice president of CEA and president of CEF, the Connecticut Education Foundation, CEA's charitable arm.
In every episode, you'll hear thought-provoking interviews, as well as actionable tips and strategies that you can implement in your daily life. We'll have stimulating discussions to help you become a more informed, an effective educator and advocate for your students and the teaching profession.
Thanks for spending some time with us today. Now let's jump right into Two Teas in a Pod.
Well, we are really excited today, Jocelyn, to have a distinguished member of our CEA history, I guess. You get to have that distinction. We have Daria Plummer with us, who served as CEA president from 1996 to 2000. And in our pre-discussion, right, Jocelyn, we discovered that we believe Daria was the first full-time vice president, which is an important notation because it's one of the ways Connecticut stands out from the other states is having a two-officer commitment to the full-time work of this association. But probably more importantly, she was a South Windsor teacher, and that's what drove her to this profession and allowed her to kind of feel excited to serve. So, Daria, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my honor and my pleasure. Thank you. Great to be back, and it's great to walk through and to reminisce.
Well, you know, and that's part of what we want to do today because CEA has a tremendous honor of being 175 years old as an association, and that is a long time.
It is.
But we laugh a little bit, but the more things change, the more they stay the same in some regards. And then sometimes in some capacities, change has been overwhelming and judgment to be kind of waited till later date to decide how that has all worked out for us. But what do you kind of think as you kind of ponder, you know, where you were in 96 and 2000, where we are today? What do you think? Give us your initial how are we doing thought.
I'm actually going to go back a few more years from 96. I will go back to 92 and even a couple of years for that. Change was coming at CEA and at teachers rapidly. We were, I'm not saying battling and trying to shield ourselves, but all sorts of buzzwords were starting to pop up. And I mean, clearly it was accountability. Clearly it was national standards. Clearly it was a national standards certification for teachers. And everybody, it seemed, political and business community, wanted a piece of it to be part of education, shape education the way they thought it should be shaped. And I would say that they were somewhat tumultuous years, including our diversity drive. We faced Sheff versus O'Neill in 1996 and continued actually to face it.
To this day.
To this day, in this hour, trying to make sure that every single student has quality education. But I believe it was a tug between what was perceived as same old, and teaching the whole child, and the new push that you had to have accountability. Everybody had to be at the same level, almost at the same time. We went through a lot of internal change trying to meet outside expectations and yet preserve what we knew was right educationally, both students and staff.
I don't know, Jocelyn, sound familiar?
I mean, it really does. And I think about the journey that our education, public education has been on in the state of Connecticut since, you know, the early 90s, which is 30 years at this point. And think, you know, the impact that had on our profession and the work that we continue to have to do as a union to ensure that we engage members and really stay on top of it, because it can be brutally draining. It can it can be exhausting.
Well, yeah. And if you think about the things that our members are talking about, I think there is going to be a whole lot of teachers who just heard you say all of those things, Daria, and are going to be like, oh, that was June. Like, that is literally what was happening in my district, that trying to find that term accountability, really, that's the long-term trauma in education. And it's not that we don't want to be accountable. It's that what outside forces view as accountability has truly caused harm in our classroom. So when you think just even the impact of standardized testing has had on us in the last 30 years, we are fighting that battle continuously, that this over commitment to intense amounts of standardized testing has harmed kids.
Well, I believe it has. And I'm going to tell you, I think we have what I would call instant mashed potato syndrome. We want results yesterday.
Right.
So we put in some new directive. And yet, if we don't achieve, if everyone doesn't achieve instantly, we cry, oh my, and then we feel we have to change it. Or something else comes along the way and nobody is waiting for the outcome to change. I'd like to share one story. For a while there, when I went back to teaching after having been at CEA, we had an opportunity as teachers to self-guide, self-direct our own professional development. You chose something and you had to tie it to an outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I did. I loved it. I spent hours doing research. I had every one of my students multiple times a year enter into poetry contests, and they were published. And I thought, do you think if I followed them for at least 3 years, I would see any difference in CMTs, especially in the language-based area? I loved it. I spent countless hours diving into the research, finding out what they did, etc., only to find out the end of year two. And I want you to know, their scores were higher than their peers. But I was told, oh no, we can't do this anymore. If you want to do it on your own, fine. But now we have a new director from the district, and that was thrown out. That professionally so frustrating.
I would say that's one of the reasons that we fought so tirelessly for the legislation this year, changing our teacher evaluation model to a growth mindset that will bring back that type of self-guided professional growth, because we know that the outcomes of our students and the successes of our students are a result of the work that we do with them, but sometimes have nothing to do with our professional growth or our skill sets as educators. And so we really fought tirelessly. And I think some of it brings back to the work that we've done to engage members. Members are working to take back the profession that kind of was slow rolled, taken away from them from the early 90s into the COVID era of teaching, where businesses, politicians, and other anti-public education groups really took this narrative away from us. And we need to take it back. And we're doing that, but at the cost of a lot of pain for our educators, loss of staff, teachers, and to students who really are measured by something that isn't what their value is.
Well, right.
And that's what's the sadness, right?
And it's the cost of the personal time and life of an educator. I don't care if you're a preschool educator or if you're teaching AP Physics 11th, 12th grade. The amount of time that you have to dedicate, not only to your students, but to your district's demands, as good as they might be, and as pure as they might seem to be, there's very little time left for the individual. And parceling that out and finding a spot is very difficult. But the one thing, and I'm elementary school-based, and I don't want anyone listening to this who may be middle school or high school-based to say, oh, it's an elementary school point of view. But we are teaching whole people, whole children. We are not just teaching a skill set to achieve a specific score. So you have to take in that whole child, no matter what district you're in. You have to take in their background, what may be affecting them, and you have to be conscious of that.
Well, I'll affirm you. As a high school math teacher, there's a presumption about how we approach, right? You know, there's this, skill drill. And realistically, that's not how you teach. You have to understand who the kids are. You have to know where they're at, and then you develop them. And you move them along sort of a continuum of learning. You're 100% correct that in order to be effective, you have to assume that your role is to grow this person, and the tool that you're using, in my case, is math. When you accept that that's sort of the great responsibility of the job, it's a lot more fun, to be honest with you, because most of the time, the kids who walk in the door are some really interesting people who've had some really extraordinary experiences, and getting to know them and understand them and weave their narrative into your learning opportunities is a really fun job. But it is different, right? I think back to some of my early experiences. You know, I did high school math a few years ago when I learned it. And I don't think there was as much time spent on who were we as people that was the stuff you did after school, right? When you were hanging out in the classrooms with the teachers. But now I think it's so completely integrated into the daily expectation. I used to always tell my teachers when we would talk, like, okay, how are we prepping for the year or whatever? And I used to remind people that one of the greatest defenses you always have against sort of administrative critique, you know, do you give too many Fs? Do you do this? Do you do that? I said, your biggest defense against that is your knowledge of those students. So if they walk in my classroom and they go, Kate, you have 7 kids with Fs? Wow. And I go, listen, here's the deal. And I can articulate with each one of those 7 what's going on, how we're working out of it, how I've been working with those kids. Then people kind of go, oh, you know them. If I look at you and I go, yep, I have 7 and I don't know anything about those kids, then that's not a lot to defend in terms of your practice. So I think there's a lot to be said that the evolution of our profession in some very positive ways has, I think, pulled that whole child mentality throughout the system, as opposed to really saying, okay, we're going to let the kindergarten and first grade and you guys get to be nurturers, right? Like, you're going to nurture. Middle school, you're going to teach hygiene, because that's what we really need middle school teachers to do. And high school, you know, get them ready for the SAT, right? Like, get them ready. And I think instead we've stepped back and said, what feeds children and what also feeds us as the teachers in those spaces? And really, it is that commitment to growing kids in the different ways that we have the opportunities to do that. But I do think you are absolutely right that you kind of firsthand saw the pivot point that landed us to where we are today, which is a lot of frustration and burnout with not anything to show for it. It's not like we've burned everybody out. We've ran on this marathon and now everybody's great and we have to sustain this. It's we've turned up the heat in a space that produced nothing.
So if I could add, and I find that point so very fascinating, I was full-time vice president from 1990 to 94, NEA director from 94 to 96, and then president from 96 to 2000. So I had been out of the classroom full-time 8 years out of 10. I'm very grateful I had those 2 years in between. Did anchor bring me right back to the core? But when I went back in 2000, and being shot at us was every new directive, every new assessment that we could possibly do. There's so much more than teaching in a linear fashion.
Right.
You have to cross-connect. And that's one of the things I try to do, having learned so much from being out of the classroom, how outsiders said, oh, you don't ever want us in the classroom. You wanted to shut the door and teach. And I was bound and determined, I'm proving them wrong, baby. And I had once a month, much to my principal's dismay, but God bless him, I adored him, and he became my best friend and advocate. I brought people into the classroom because we would cross-connect the curriculum. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is key still to this hour, because you don't teach in a silo. Maybe if it's for an AP test, perhaps. But you absolutely do need to cross-connect so kids can learn. Do I really need to learn capitals? You know, I mean, or capital letters. I'm really huge into mechanics. Maybe because you're going to interview this person and send this person this letter. So we would do that. Time consuming? Absolutely. Do you need help from others? Absolutely. But is it so worthwhile to prep students with experiences so perhaps you have triggered them in a way they never would have been triggered and can go forward in life to be productive?
So I'm going to change the subject just a little bit back to the organization, 175 years, and how the work that we do really can shift the narrative of public education. And understanding that being in the role of vice president for me, full release, and the gift it is to be able to represent our educators full time and be a face that shows that, I think about the things that got me involved in this organization and how much I love working in this organization, serving our members and doing that work. What got you into that level of engagement that said, I really want to be a representative who can lead that voice and put us in a space where we're fighting the good fight and doing the work for our members?
So I'm not sure how much time we have, but historically, I started teaching in South Windsor in 1967. I had been part of Massachusetts teachers student program when I was in college. So for me, it was natural to go to a rep council meeting when I was first teaching. And lo and behold, probably sexist to say this, but if you were a female, you became the secretary almost immediately. And that being said, I became involved locally. Come to find out, there's more to teaching than just being in your classroom, associating with other teachers across the state.
Right.
So summer leadership, I first started going to forget where it is, but it was down in New London County on this lake.
I think you were in like summer camps, weren't you? Something crazy like that.
Something like that, but it was a way to connect with other teachers from across the state.
Yeah.
That was mind-blowing. And then as we aged and worked up through leadership locally, there was something called county councils. And you know, if you went to a county council after school, they would actually feed you. And you would get to meet the officers of the association, and you would get to meet all the managers of the different departments, of the executive director. It was a big deal. Well, that drew me. That drew me out of the classroom to other teachers across the state, hearing that they had the same problems. And what was my dues-paying association doing for me, the teacher, back in South Windsor, for me, the teacher, all over the state? I, for one, found it fascinating and invaluable and extremely grateful CEA was doing.
I think, you know, that there's a lot of us that that's kind of the origin story. You know, you're doing this work in your local going, are we getting anywhere? Right? Like that question, you kind of go, are we treading water? Are we moving? And you don't really know until you have the opportunity to talk to other people and to understand, well, is my story the same or different? In what ways is it the same? In what ways is it different? And so it's such a powerful tool to start integrating across the state because it allows us to think about, well, if they're dealing with this in Guilford, how am I managing that in Manchester? Or if Darien is having this experience, is there something I can take from that to pull back to Manchester? And so to me, that is the real power of this association is when we start to discover either the good or the bad, right? How do we combat the bad and elevate the good? We have a platform to share that and to really have good conversation about, well, what did you negotiate? Well, what's the conversation you had? Well, my super says these things to me. How do you navigate that? There's something really powerful about being able to talk that through with people who are in a like situation, right? Teaching is not normal. It's not like any other job, right? It's not a normal, like you're not going to talk to your banker friend about what it's like to navigate some of these pathways. We have very unique issues. And so it's really important to have a place to kind of bat those around and be like, well, we're doing this. Does that make sense? Literally before this, I was having a conversation with somebody who called me and said, hey, we're having a conversation about attendance and academic performance. What have you heard across the state? What are the conversations that are being had? I've had people reach out and say, listen, we're having conversations about AI and what that's going to start looking like. Yeah. What have the conversations been like around the state? And so I get to play sort of connector and investigator and find, you know, ways that people across the state, you get out of your own space to really have a bigger conversation on these issues. So it's, to me, I agree with you. That was kind of what engaged me. It was like, oh, wait a minute. I have this whole state of people I can kind of chat with.
But what also this did, being involved in CEA, you got to see the organization was very aware of what was affecting public education. And I'm going to say this politely, which is legislative politics. We are governed by state statute. And that being said, we can affect them. And that's the importance. And I don't believe innocently, 55 years ago when I started the journey, or 57 years ago when I started the journey, that you had that knowledge of why we were under control of something
right.
else. You didn't think you were. Now we know and know better. And that is what CEA, I believe, and NEA does for our profession. It is constantly on the watch, constantly trying to protect
right.
us, constantly trying to move us forward, constantly trying to change what was changed and did not work to make it better. For
yeah.
And it's not just teachers. It is students, children, their families.
because you can't separate those.
Well, and I think that's why member engagement is so important and why we need our members to share their voices and be, you know, a strong part of our association. Because when we have that knowledge and connection to our members and direct access to what's going on in the classroom, we can advocate differently and better. And we can be much more proactive and much less reactive, whack-a-mole kind of stance when we are actively connected to our people in the rooms where it happens, seeing what's happening, sharing their successes, and talking about what they know, their knowledge. We have such incredibly gifted educators in our state, and caring and nurturing, and they know what they're doing. And when they're able to do it well, it's amazing.
Well, and it's funny, Jocelyn. You know, the other day I was with Johanna Hayes at a teacher conference, and she really, you know, articulated very clearly that we as educators need to get in the rooms where the decisions are being made. And while it may not always feel comfortable, it's important, because she said, you know, and she's so right, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And she's not wrong, right? Like, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And so, you know, this concept that we're the experts in our profession, we know what teachers need so that they can take care of kids and educate them well, and that we need to own that expertise and sometimes drag a chair up to the table ourselves. You know, I thought that was a really kind of visual thing, that if you're not at the table, you're on the menu, and we all need to find a way to get at the table, because we are on the side of right. We know that.
No, you are, and I'm assuming through everything you both do that you are in various districts throughout the school year. Because while you are now on release time, you have come from that specific classroom and that specific district.
Absolutely.
And you are not going to be eaten. And that is to the benefit of every teacher in this state, but also seeing something that might be in Litchfield County or Windham County or New London County that is different from our experience just makes our engagement much richer and much better when we talk to people across the street.
It makes us more credible too.
Mm-hmm.
So you're absolutely right. You know, I value highly, and I know, you know, I can speak for Jocelyn and this as well. We value the opportunities we have to hear what's going on in other spaces. Because when I can go across the street and have a conversation with the governor, and I can talk about Manchester, and I can talk about Litchfield, and I can talk about Tallent, and I can talk about Darien and Stamford and Waterbury and Brid, you know, you can start having that conversation. You establish yourself as the expert, because nobody else can do that. Nobody else has the access we do. And so really valuing our membership and their experiences is really a hallmark.
So I have one final question. It's a two-part, but we don't often have the opportunity to have somebody here who's really seen our organization.
Or this old. That's it. You really meant.
It might take a minute to think about, but from your experience when you were here at 21 Oak Street, you know, a moment that you have that really was something special or that you are really excited that you got to be a part of, and then what you're excited about for CEA right now, where you see that we could go as an organization for the next foreseeable future.
So that's a question that probably should have been given to me in writing 2 weeks ago. It is a heavy hitter, two-parter.
You can take them in whatever order you want.
I know. I believe one of the events, it was a recognition we had of the Bridgeport strike. While I was aware of the Bridgeport strike, I wasn't part of the Bridgeport strike, but the Bridgeport strike, teachers who went to jail, made a huge difference in where we stand now in society and respect that teachers have. And we did have a recognition during my years at CEA, and I do believe that indeed brought forth an awful lot of good and negative memories for members, but it was something that drove us.
Well, and those materials, by the way, the things that were produced in that time are things we still lean on to continue to educate our members. So you've had a lasting impact in that regard. Those things are still shared out. Because we don't ever want to lose sight of the sacrifices made on our behalf.
Don't ever want to forget. And we don't ever want to go back there.
Correct.
Second part, one of the things that we're doing now.
Something you're excited about going forward.
I believe CEA today is far more diverse as an organization representing teacher issues in every avenue of our state, far more than we ever could have in previous years. And I will credit technology for that. Who knew what a podcast was when I was president? Nobody knew what a podcast was. I mean, when I was president, I had this big portable phone in the car that was a suitcase size. I mean, we have just in the past 30 years immensely popped forward so we can connect with teachers. And I think that skill and that skill, not alone, but combined with others, clearly comes out on top because you have to reach every teacher. And I will say the use of email, there's internal email within districts for their own association, and I know you have it. And that makes a huge difference. And I will say politically, having on my phone message, because I have a landline, you now know how old I am, hearing that this is Kate Diaz, we are in support of, it makes a huge difference. You are connecting with teachers. We always wanted to be, we always tried, but I think you have an opportunity now better than any other generation.
And let's not forget that we have more opportunities to continue to celebrate the 175th anniversary of CEA. We have a gala September 29th, and that will be at the Bristol Doubletree. So maybe, Dari, you will be able to schedule us in for that.
Me too.
And any member is welcome to join us. We have opportunities for locals to sponsor tables, any opportunity we have to uplift our profession. And we will be honoring some education champions when we return in September. So that'll be a lot of fun and a really good opportunity for us to thank the people who came before us.
Will there be karaoke?
Oh, but dancing, yes. Okay. And we will sing along.
Fantastic. I'll be there.
Sounds good. Well, I'm going to end it there and say thank you so much. We could talk for hours,
Winslow,
we're going to take our headphones off and just keep going. And the rest of you are going to have to call us and ask us what we did. But I want to say thank you so much for taking time out of your day to come in here and to have this conversation. I think it's so important for us to always feel connected to the history of this organization, to the opportunity of this organization, and for people to feel and know that you're never actually done with CEA, ever.
You're never done with this profession.
That is correct.
Gratefully, gratefully. So.
Well, and I just want to also circle back and share our gratitude for the work that you did do for this organization. We are where we are because of the officers and leaders and educators who did the work before us. So
thank you
for that. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you.
We want to thank all of our members for all you do and for listening to the latest edition of Two Teas in a Pod.
For more education talk, subscribe to Two Teas in a Pod and find us at cea.org/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like what you heard? Share a podcast with your friends and colleagues and spread the word because we are
stronger together.